So the house sold.
Yeah, we did everything right.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I wanted it to sell quickly. I didn't want to screw around with it. And so I did all the stuff. I scoped the sewer line, and sure enough, it had a break in it. So I fixed it $6,000 later. And we fixed up the roof, and we cleaned everything out, made sure everything was working correctly. So, and we looked for an oil tank, and there was none. We got all that stuff all lined up, so when it hit the market, everything was ready to go.
That's good.
We had three offers all over the asking price.
Wow.
Yeah, we settled on one that was $30,000 over the asking price. All cash, no contingencies. So I was like, well, I can take that off.
I can live with that.
I'm not even going to counter, you know.
And
so they're, we signed off on it, and then they're signing on Thursday.
Were there, were they always on city sewer kind of things, or county sewer, or whatever it is? Because they have a septic tank over there.
No, no septic tank.
Okay.
Yeah, it's, so they, it's a regular sewer line.
When they did the Broadmoor stuff.
Yeah, what's really weird is it's not in the street. It's always in the back of the properties.
Oh.
And so I think eventually they'll probably put a sewer line in the street so they can service it. We were early into that Bowman development. We were on Maple Drive, which is the first street, probably the fifth or sixth house that was built by Bowman. And then in 62 moved up to the Fairmore address.
Wow. A long time in one place. That's what I was just writing. It's like, because they moved, it's like right after you were born. They moved in.
Well, and so did Richard and Edward.
And
so all the cousins.
Finding out that Richard first bought the house was right next door.
Next door, on Maple Drive.
Wild. Your Uncle Ed says, it was one T after another going through the schools there for about 8 years.
And I'm the eldest of the clan, and I always make sure they know that.
Very good. So I have family things to ask you about. And then impressions as well of your dad as he's moving through the political process and that kind of thing. So let's start out with family things. How much did your dad ever tell you about his parents' marriage?
Really not much.
Okay.
You know, we had to kind of glean that ourselves.
Because I've got strong evidence and circumstantial evidence that it was an arranged marriage. I need another strong source before that goes in. And it turns out it's not really relevant to the book, but it's just one of those things that's like, wow.
It could have been.
It's
interesting. In 1970, I went to Beirut. And, you know, visiting family and all kinds of fun. And I went out to the Ashley residence, which is my grandmother's maiden name. And there was this really foxy girl called Monique, and she was feeding me grapes and playing the guitar, you know. It was really cool until they found out I was engaged. So I've been telling this story forever, and this last year, a relative of the Ashley family was out here, and I said, by the way, do you have an aunt named Monique? He said, oh, yeah, Monique. Yeah, she moved to the United States and became an attorney. And my wife is going, God, that's a story. It's really true.
Well, so you've been back. That's great. And I saw you. You went on several of your dad's overseas trips. Chapters that I have are growing up, which is until June 1944, and then adulthood, because the third week of June, your dad's kind of working at the store, thinking about going to law school, and within 2 weeks, he's married, grandfather dies, he takes over the store, his brothers go missing. It's just welcome to adulthood.
That's right.
Just boom.
Just like that.
Now, they also lost a child in there.
Yep.
Okay.
got a box of letters that Richard Edward Norm Parsons and other people wrote to my dad.
Oh, wow.
So
yeah.
That'll go to Pacific.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Do you happen to have letters from the Syrian family to you guys in World War II?
No. Don't have those.
Your dad, in one of the interviews with me, mentioned specifically that they were fascinating because they were censored. They were coming from French-occupied.
Uh-huh.
So it just would be fascinating just to see those.
Yeah.
So five things. Basically 10 months.
Yeah, it's like the most traumatic things that can happen in your life. You get married, you get a new job, you get a new house, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He just had to, like, manage it somehow.
Yeah, just stunning. Did he ever talk about what it was like to step into the management at Atiyah Brothers?
Well, it was a great responsibility, and he was really preserving the company for the family, basically.
Do you know what happened? Because there was your dad or your grandfather had left active management in 1940 because of his heart.
Right.
And so there was a manager. Did that guy stay on, or?
Well, there were a couple of people that stayed on,
uh-huh.
and there was a little bit of conflict. Cause here's the new kid who's the owner, and then there's these guys that, you know, about the business.
Yeah.
And I worked with them.
Uh-huh.
So I got along with them.
Yeah, so they did stay on long term.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a lot of people stayed on long term.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. Your dad talks about going in there and working with people who've been there since 1905. So they've been there for 40 years. And at this point, there are people who've been there, you know, for similar lengths of time.
Right.
It's like, huh.
Well, 1905 was a pivotal year because that was the Lewis and Clark Exposition.
Yeah.
And that's really when that really jump-started the business.
Yeah.
Because they won all kinds of gold medals.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I've got an appointment with David on Thursday to go look at awards and stuff.
No. So I've got his collection that I'm marketing.
Oh, you have the Lewis and Clark collection?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. It's pretty funny. He had a couple. Have you seen the big posters?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he had several up in the attic. And I said, you know, I like one of those. Oh, I'll just go pick one out. So I picked one out. Next to he calls, well, you would pick the best one. duh. He taught me right.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. Yeah, Jerry Thompson has got, because her husband was really into the Lewis and Clark Exposition, so she's got a big one framed.
Oh, yeah.
Which they just love. Yeah, just love down there. It's amazing. Lewis and Clark Exposition, the population of Portland between 1900 and 1910 more than doubles.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden there are customers.
Right.
You know,
With money.
With money.
Yeah, it's like, and the building boom was going on in the West Hills. And like
The West Hills and a lot of the East Side neighborhoods were being built at that time.
Yeah.
It was just amazing stuff. Any stories that were passed down to you about the downtimes? World War I was a tough time because where all the rugs came from, the Ottoman Empire was having some issues.
Well, it was interesting. Right after World War I is really when they decided to do their own direct importing.
Yeah.
Because the Ottoman Empire was kaput,
you
know, and so that's when the other half of the Atiyah family went back to New York and started the importing and wholesaling.
Yeah, yeah.
And that went through two generations, and then, you know, there was the revolution in Iran in 78, 79, and about that time I started to get interested in the importing and wholesaling, and that side of the family didn't want to have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, I'll do it. So
yeah.
And that'll, when you ask me about the trade mission to China, then that'll explain how we got into that.
Yeah, because I saw that you took over the Kerman brand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is really neat that how that works. But they're not from Persia anymore.
Well, we tried to go back to Iran.
Yeah.
During the Clinton administration, they lifted the embargo on pistachio nuts, caviar, and rugs.
Mm-hmm.
So we went back in, but just couldn't get those guys to, you know, conform to Western type of business.
Yeah.
I'd order like a 4x6 green rug.
Yeah.
And I'd go back and it was 4x2x6x7 blue. And I'd say, well, that's not what I ordered. And they said, well, that's what we wanted to make.
Yeah.
I said, well, it doesn't work that way. You know?
Yeah.
And they, because they valued Clinton and Madeleine Albright, the crew over there in Iran made portrait rugs of Clinton and Albright, but they wouldn't trust the Persians to bring them back, so they gave them to my wife to bring back. So we put them to Madeline Albright.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Was hers a very short rug?
No, they were like, you know, 3x5.
Well, actually, for her, that's life size.
So. Yeah.
When she and Robert Reich, who was the Secretary of Labor, were presented when Clinton first was elected, they're both 5 feet or under.
Yeah.
And so Robert Reich got up, and they were both had to stand on a platform to get up and be seen over the microphone.
Yeah.
But Robert Reich looked at her and looked at Clinton, who he'd known forever, and said, you know, I knew I was on the short list, but this is ridiculous.
That's good.
1930s, any stories come through to you?
Yeah, the best one is Fred. Yeah, I think it was Fred that was in Iran in 29 to buy a whole bunch of rugs with a lot of cash.
Yeah.
And everything just went to hell.
Yeah.
And my grandfather signing the telex, don't spend the money.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So
yeah.
He came back without buying a bunch of rugs and spending all the money. So they lucked out and they had money during the 30s.
Wow. Yeah.
A lot of people didn't.
Yeah. Exactly. So. Exactly. How often did your grandfather go back? I haven't found him really traveling back to the Middle East until after Aziz leaves.
Yeah.
It's like 1920 is his first passport or something.
Right, right. I think Aziz did more of the traveling.
Yeah.
I'm the traveler of the family on my side. Before I was 30, I was around the world twice.
Uh-huh.
So I've lost track of the number of times I've been to China.
Yeah.
Over 30.
Yeah. Huh. Amazing stuff. And it's fun to see the records from then because you get a lot of the records on the ships.
Yeah.
So one of the first, because I started an Ancestry.com on the Atiya family.
Oh.
So I have your genealogy hither, thither, and yon as far as I can go. But one of the first things I found is your dad, Richard and Ed, coming through customs from their 1929 trip.
Sure, and there's pictures of
them. Yeah.
Pretty cute.
It's just a blast.
And that Franklin car.
That
was purchased from what was then Braley.
Yeah.
Which became Braley and Graham.
Yeah.
And we sent a picture of that to Buzz Braley before he sold the business.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just, the thinking of that, I don't know who would think to buy a car here
and ship send it
there
over
for basically a vacation. So
and leave it there.
And then leave it there.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay.
Well, I've considered a motorcycle ride from India into Tibet and just on a, a bike that I can just leave there.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are you going to do with it?
Can't ship it. Yeah, when I lived in Italy, I had a moped, and it certainly didn't come back.
Right.
It just went on to the next person.
Mm-hmm.
But a car in the 1920s.
Yeah.
It's a significant thing.
It is.
And I was actually looking at it, trying to, the price is not out of line. I think the price today would be like $37,000 for the car.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, it's a nice car, but it's not out of line.
Yeah.
But still, then you ship it there and have a driver and leave it there. So, fascinating stuff.
Where's that car today?
Exactly. Yeah, I was expecting when your dad went back to the village in 1984, I was expecting the car to be mounted up on top of the hill or something.
Interesting, you can't get a car through that village. Right in the middle, the streets are too narrow.
They're too narrow.
Which is good because you can't get a tank in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Thinking about this, because I've been talking with your dad as he was donating things to Pacific for years. Thinking, boy, it'd be nice to get over there and see that in the 2011. It's like, not going to happen.
Yeah.
We're not going. school right then, the rest of them were looking around saying, well, our lives have totally changed. And I don't think any of them finished college in 4 years.
No.
Nobody who heard that finished college in 4 years.
Yeah. Huge break.
Yeah, just a huge, huge break. And then the heartbreak of your dad, boy, he really wanted to be in the military.
Yeah.
And, he couldn't do it.
You know, I'm trying to piece that together, because I've got some documents that where he was summoned for a physical.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one that said he was good to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then I haven't seen anything that says, no, don't qualify.
Well, because there were actually three stages. So the first one, there was like an on-campus group of people who were doing military training.
Yeah.
And so he was fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
But when it came to the actual military, because at that point he'd had his cyst removed and was in a cast.
Yeah.
And they looked at him and looked at his stuff and said no. And then everybody left. That's in. He has that surgery in December. So in the spring, when they're looking at him, they say no.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so everybody leaves campus, and he finishes out the year, but everybody leaves campus. And there's a series of orders that he gets from Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
And eventually they give him his discharge papers.
Yeah.
And so then the third part comes in. He goes down to him to the draft board.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all the same people, and they just look at him and say, no!
What part of no don't you get?
Exactly.
Well, as it turns out, it worked out fine.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, he jumped into the U.S. Coast Guard Temporary Reserve.
Yeah. Walking the docks.
Walking the docks one night a week, 12 hours. Wild. And seeing all the ships are loading to send over to the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
There's a great description in his oral history where he says that they appeared to load them until the captain in the bridge put his hand in the water.
Yeah, pack him up.
Pack him up, send him over. Now, did you hear stories that he was recruited by the OSS, the forerunner of the CIA?
Yeah, I heard something about that, but I don't know much about it.
He talks about it. It becomes an issue because, A, I think it's cool. But B, he said they wanted him because of his French, and he had high school French.
Yeah.
Your grandmother was basically a native French speaker.
Right.
Your dad didn't take any French in college at all.
No.
And so it's like, and when he was, in his mind, it was so he would go over, and as they were going through Vichy, France, work there. It's not going to go in the book because there's no evidence of it for it whatsoever. But I was wondering if they were going to send him to Southeast Asia.
Because
the war in Japan was still going.
Yeah.
And but it becomes an issue because several weeks later, there's a government car in front of the store.
Mm-hmm.
It thinks, oh, that's the OSS. It's the telegram saying your brothers are officially missing.
Yeah.
For your grandfather, who they don't know is dead. But and so then we go through all of that. Pretty amazing stuff. Any stories about your dad and your mom courting? They met senior year in high school. She was half a year behind.
I've got a really cool letter that she wrote to him.
Uh-huh.
Saying that she's going to be the best wife possible.
Oh, great. That's fantastic. Is that written 1944-ish?
It's written, I think, in November of 1944.
Okay, so they've already just been married.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was trying to figure out, it's... Once again, there's no evidence one way or the other, and Ed, you know, was out of there, so he wasn't, you know, in day-to-day contact. When did they decide to get married, and then all of a sudden, boom, we're getting married now?
Well, so. Remind me of some of my high school friends who were courting in high school,
yeah,
and hooked up and stayed together.
Yeah.
Then, were you at the memorial in Salem?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you heard my quote of Ted Wheeler?
Yeah.
Which is quite true, you know.
Yeah.
Stayed married for 70 years.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing. It's also amazing, your grandfather dies at age 61. Your grandmother dies at age 51.
Yeah.
And all three of their kids don't have
to die. I know.
What on earth happened to that gene?
Yeah, and Edward is now going to be moving out of his house.
Oh, he is? this stuff, and you know, the kids could go in and put stickers on it,
yeah,
and that kind of stuff. But he was kind of offended at how little actually we wanted.
I know.
It's like, no, that cuckoo clock that we got when we lived in Germany, you know, none of us ever really liked to hear that.
Well, it's interesting. I organized the dispersal of stuff at the house. And what I did is I put numbers in the hat. Mm-hmm. And then we go to a room and everyone would draw the numbers.
Oh, yeah.
And then
so
we'd express what we'd like.
Yeah.
Or what we didn't like. And then we'd make a pick. And
yeah.
We'd go to the next room.
Yeah.
And do the same thing. And after you pick like one or two things, everyone's going, oh, I'm done here. You know,
yeah.
I don't want to hear.
Yeah.
We'll just sell it. And
yeah. Absolutely. It's, yeah. Amazing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So your dad takes over the business in 44. Richard and Edward come back and do a tag team of finishing college.
Right.
And they're basically firmly ensconced by about 48.
Yeah.
They're there. And then one of the very first things they do is they say, you know, we should start our own.
Well, they leave clean drugs in the basement.
Yeah.
And it's pretty inefficient, but it did the job.
I fun descriptions of liquid ivory flakes and stuff.
Yeah. And when I started working there, I started sweeping the basement.
Yeah. Yeah. So as you guys were growing up, did you all work in there?
We would go there.
First session, that's when you and your dad put on your pioneer hat.
Well, that was way cool. That was the centennial year and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I was a page.
Oh, you were a page?
Yeah.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Fun thing. Did you, anything stick out at, you know, any of the personalities around? One thing in the, earlier this summer or spring, you brought over all these scrapbooks that you did. The first one is 61 to 63, so his first two sessions. He kept all the notes.
Oh, yeah.
That people.
example of how you could, you know, oppose somebody and beat them and still be friends.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The same with Straub.
Yeah, exactly.
Because my dad wrote the foreword to Straub's book.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Roger Martin was a fan of your dad's. Then, as Roger said, you know, we both got bigger than we should have for our britches, and I was shown that. Mm-hmm. And then, as soon as the election was over, he came over and said, "You know, what can I do for you?" And the campaign manager looked at him and said, "You can give me Greg Walden." He was 21 years old at that point.
Yeah, that's right.
But just, you know, clearly a savvy publicity kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all Roger needed to contribute to the campaign, which is very funny. So no personalities jump out at you from those early days?
Like McCall.
McCall was the governor for Monty Montgomery.
Well, he did at the same time as my dad.
Yeah.
And he's quite the character.
Yeah. Monty Montgomery eventually was a big scandal.
He's
really unethical was all, you know.
I forget what that was.
He was the chief lobbyist for the Loggers Association, or Logger Drivers.
AOL.
And it got caught up in what was happening with their money in safe.
Oh,
he was
dipping
into it.
Yeah, that's right.
And
can't do that stuff.
I haven't figured out if there was any criminal stuff, but he could have been put in prison easily. And when Jerry came in with the Attorney General, Dave Frohnmayer, and your dad just listened totally silent, and then just put his head in his hands and said, "That's not the Monty I know."
Yeah.
But other things I found out about Monty, and some of those first term notes, Monty was a slime ball. Just amazing. But, you know, your dad liked him. I mean,
well, he is a real gregarious guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I've got a picture of him and Eddie Miles.
Yeah.
Richard was more into the wall-to-wall carpet thing, and my dad was more into the area rugs and the hand-knotted rugs.
Yeah, because in the history that your Uncle Ed did of the store, you know, they saw, oops, area rugs are going out and wall-to-wall's coming in.
Yeah, well, these things come and go.
Yeah, and, we have to clean things differently, too, so, you know, all that stuff. Okay, that's good. That makes sense. Did you know that when your dad was governor, that occasionally strange people would come up and ask to see him, and he would wave them in, and it was a rug sales guy? They'd come in, just happen to be in town, and so they'd roll out rugs in the governor's office and check thread counts and talk about sores.
Well, I remember he told me that he was in the Oval Office when Reagan was president. You heard that story?
I've heard the Ford story, but yeah. So
he kicked over the rug to look at the knockdown on the back, and then goes, which is something you do in the trade. You don't even think of it.
Yeah,
just flip it over with your foot.
Exactly. The Ford story is when he was running in 74. Yeah, it was his first run. So Ford has just become president. And so Ford invited people, governors, candidates who they thought had a chance to come back, so like 8 of them from around the country go to the Oval Office. So your dad's on a private jet, goes back there, and they talk to the president, and they also are able to film it, and if they want to use it in a commercial, they can. And so they do that, your dad then flies back on the jet. He's amazed because he's been to the Oval Office, and then lo and behold, he's at the Happy Canyon that night. And your mom says, "So, was the Oval Office really oval?" And Dad says, "You know, I didn't notice, but the carpet's really nice."
Yeah, all depends what you're looking for.
Exactly, exactly. So, McCall, did you bump into McCall or hear your dad talk about McCall?
McCall came over for dinners occasionally.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, his son
he would come over for dinners.
Yeah.
Because he just lived in, up the hill a little bit. And over the hill.
And my dad told McCall that he was, he was running.
Yeah.
And McCall made the mistake, like Kitzhaber did, of trying to run again.
Yeah, exactly. I just found a great article, actually, in one of those scrapbooks that you brought over from 74 when your dad beats Clay Myers.
Yeah.
McCall's in an article quoted as saying this is the end of the Republican Party.
Yeah.
I don't know earlier than this, but your dad probably first met McCall in his first run.
Yeah.
I've got a great one where the Raleigh Hills PTA, Mrs. Victor Atiyah, president, is having a campaign thing where people come in and talk, uh-huh. And the moderator is Tom McCall.
Oh, that's great.
So
I'm one of the organizers for Raleigh Hills class reunion.
Oh, yeah? That's great.
Class of 61.
The class of 61.
And even the high school class is the 50th.
Yeah.
And when my parents were on their committee for Washington High School, I thought, wow, that's really old.
Yeah.
And now I'm it.
Yeah.
And most of us are more excited about the grade school reunion than the high school reunion.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of us were in kindergarten together.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Growing up there.
And quite a successful bunch.
Uh-huh.
I mean, like Fred Jubitz was in my class.
Yeah.
Scott Burns.
Yeah.
And, some really notable people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just amazing the way that happens.
And the person that's organizing the class reunion with me beat me for senior class president. And I was beating her sister.
Uh-huh.
At the time. Was quite instrumental in Opal Creek.
Yeah, exactly.
In 1996, he was going out, and he wanted to go out with a bang, and,
yeah.
And that's how that all got into switching over into the Ink Deep Forest.
Yeah. Yeah, 10 years after your dad was really involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's switch to Opal Creek right now. Your dad appears to have been telling George one thing and his staff another.
Yeah.
And it's not clear if he was doing that. I don't think he was doing it to lie. I just think he was totally into talking to one person and then talking to another person.
Yeah.
Did your dad ever talk about Opal Creek stuff? I mean, you're...
Well, he was kind of in a bind because he couldn't be the proponent for turning it into wilderness
and
still be friends with the industry.
Yeah.
so he's kind of this kind of hands on. Pam Amadeo would have more to say about.
Yeah, yeah, she does, and that fits in exactly with what I've learned. Your dad was in favor of wilderness, but he was really worried because wilderness is forever.
It is. Yeah.
And so, what do you do with that? So when I interviewed your cousin Bob, who was his driver in 78, Bob was asking, you know, I should have confronted him more or talked to him more about wilderness stuff. And then I came across the Pat Amadeo stuff and went interviewing. And said it over to Bob. Because the concept was really new.
Yeah.
It was just so Bob's looking at it kind of from 10 years later. Whoa, we should have done this. Like, you know, it wasn't clear at the time at all.
Well, it was interesting because, you know, we owned the property.
Mm-hmm.
And we were quite defensive about booting people out of the mining area.
Yeah.
And then eventually it hit us, you know, we want to preserve this, we got to be inclusive.
Yeah.
And it was a whole different mindset. We just changed and flipped.
Yeah.
Forest Service couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And, I don't know, here we are years later, successful.
Yeah.
As a nonprofit organization.
Yeah.
We did a lot of things right.
Yeah.
Sometimes we lucked out.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
That's what happens a lot. Did your dad talk to you about his decision to run for governor in 74?
He did talk to the family and said, I'd like to do this. And
uh-huh.
We were like, yeah, that's fun, you know,
because
uh-huh. we wanted to be on the, you know, the back steering committee thing.
Right, right. That. Do you remember when that was? I mean, his official announcement is just before Christmas in 1973.
Yeah, it must have been around Thanksgiving or something
okay.
like that.
Up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Were you part of the campaigns at all?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I was in the back room.
Uh-huh.
You know, which is where I'd like to be.
Yeah. The 1974 campaign has been described as fun and one of the most disorganized things that anybody has ever seen.
Yeah, I'd go with that.
Okay.
Because it's all brand new to us.
Yeah. 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 Now, had you ever worked on your dad's legislative campaigns?
A little bit, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was in school. And
did it, just impression, was the legislative campaign the way they worked? Was the gubernatorial campaign in 74 just like a bigger version of that?
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot more money, too.
Yeah, a lot more money. That's the impression I get. And when he brings in a campaign person, Shirley Woodward, she comes in and she looks, because she's done campaigns.
Yeah.
She looks at it in September and says, there's just no way we can win. But your dad didn't. He went by gut feeling.
Right.
His gut feeling about 3 weeks out, he said, yeah, we're not going to win this one.
Well, I think I even had her plan. I think it's in the.
Yeah, because she put a plan together.
Yeah, this is what's got to happen.
Yeah. Do you have that?
I think I already gave it to Pacific.
Okay, good. Good. Yeah. Because I've got that 78 ones where there was a similar. Sharon Page was kind of the person who went between them.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody loved her, but Sharon didn't have organizing. She had the volunteers organize,
yeah.
but the rest of the stuff she did wasn't that great at. So by 78, it's a professional thing.
Yeah, but you know, gotta do it this way,
yeah.
gang.
Weren't paying very well, but it was a professional
yeah.
thing. Coming out of that 1974 campaign, it's fascinating. Your dad loses by the largest amount since 1950, and yet he is incredibly optimistic.
Well, the timing was terrible.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Watergate and all that
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah, all those things happen.
Throw the bums out.
Yeah. So would it be your impression then that, in effect, your dad was discounting Watergate, so I lost by a lot, but the Watergate discount is there.
Yeah.
So if I lost, it wasn't by as much.
Right.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then as he goes around the state, people love him.
Yeah.
He basically introduced himself to the state,
mm-hmm.
and people say, wow, this is great. Do you remember any talk about him when he went to the national conventions, 68, 72, 76?
Well, I know he liked going to them.
Uh-huh.
They don't interest me at all.
Yeah.
But he liked going and being a part of the action.
Okay. Some fun things. There's one great one from 72. Once again, that's the signature of the scrapbooks.
guy that I'd done business with in Eugene. And I said, well, he's not here. And so they eventually left. But
yeah.
I said, well, what authority are you here? Well, the Attorney General said we could be here. Okay, look around. So they left. So I call up the Attorney General.
Uh-huh.
What's the deal? He didn't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Next week I'm being audited by the IRS. And I took my attorney down and I said, well, Mr. T, if you just quit complaining, we can make this go away for $100. So I wrote him a check for $100.
Hmm.
And that was the end of it. But
that
administration was like,
yeah,
run amok.
Yeah. 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 I grew up in Southern Oregon. And so during that time, I was born in Eureka and grew up in Medford. And, that's the same time we started seeing helicopters all over the place.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, and Ronald Reagan was the governor in California,
yeah,
too. So you're thinking, you know, if you want to find the pot, really, just walk in the woods.
Really?
Huh. Wild stuff.
Yeah.
Wild stuff.
Yeah, no search warrant. No.
Yeah.
Just doing it on their own.
Just doing it on their own. Huh. So, what did your dad say when he decided to run again?
I think he felt really confident that he could pull it off.
Uh-huh.
First of all, the economy was terrible for Bob Straub.
Yeah.
And so, it didn't look like he was doing anything.
Yeah.
I know he was, but so sometimes there's only so much you can do.
Yeah.
So the timing was flipped.
Yeah.
And the campaign was better organized, as you pointed out. So
uh-huh.
I think, I can do this.
Uh-huh. Any sense when McCall got in? What does that do to the dynamic?
It was really weird, you know. I know my dad had some conversations with McCall.
Mm-hmm.
You really want to do this? You know, I'm going to win.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to beat you.
Mm-hmm.
And McCall, of course, with bravado, oh, no, I'm Tom McCall.
Yeah.
And, McCall, I think, ran a terrible campaign, too.
It seems like his campaign just consisted of being Tom McCall.
Yeah, that's right. You can't pull that off anymore.
Yeah. One person described it really well. By the time McCall left office at the end of 74, there was already the myth of Tom McCall.
Yeah.
And 4 years later, even Tom McCall couldn't live up to the myth of Tom McCall. Well, there you are.
Yeah.
Did your dad ever talk about the mythical meeting that took place between him and Roger Martin to get him to pull out of the race in 78?
I heard a little bit about it, but I can't.
Okay. I have the version that I'm going to go with, and it's not your dad's version. The evidence is really clear.
Mm-hmm.
But then his staffers, so especially people like Denny Miles and things like that, they then blow it up. Oh,
yeah.
Mean people! It's like, you know, it wasn't quite like that. But your dad was really surprised at the outcome when they decided that he should pull out of the race. But it was non-binding. It was not.
Yeah.
So he just said, "But I'm going to win," and he did.
Yeah.
So takes on Straub. Last time,
yeah,
pretty amazing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, based on some stuff your dad said to me, I went back and did the thorough research. In Oregon history, only 12 governors have been elected to second terms.
Hmm.
And that accounts Kitzhaber twice.
Yeah.
But of those 12, only 6 completed their second term.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
A couple die, but
yeah,
and Kitzhaber resigns.
Yeah.
You know, an hour and a half into his term. But it's just, it's elite company to do that and win re-election.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty amazing. It's just that we've seen it a lot with, you know, Hatfield served 2, McCall served 2.
Yeah.
And so, you know, of those 6, you know, we've seen 5 of them right here in our lifetime.
Be interested to see what happens with Brown.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. I think right now I don't think she'll have any problem, but who knows? Who knows? It's just hard to find a Republican.
Yeah.
You can run statewide these
That's
days.
Right.
Yeah.
People ask me, why don't you run for governor? What are you, nuts?
Exactly. I've seen that.
Yeah.
I've seen that. Yeah, all sorts of things come up. Even with all the Kitzhaber things going on, Denny Miles, the legislature still is stingy on protection for the governor.
Yeah.
There's a lot more now, but it's still stingy.
Mm-hmm.
And Denny, with things with the Rajneeshis and, you know, all sorts of other stuff with your dad, it's like, man, if they ask me to come and testify, I'm going to say, you pay more money. You
yeah.
know, this is a nasty job where you need more protection.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from the decisions and all that other kind of stuff. As my sabbatical started at the end of January, so started this doing a lot of interviews. And then Kitts Harbor blew up. So that was 2 weeks of my life doing that kind of stuff. But in the middle of that, I was interviewing Barbara Roberts and all this stuff. And so when I talked to Barbara Roberts, I said, okay, here's all I want you to pass along to new Governor Brown. I would advise her to channel her inner Barbara Roberts and her inner Victoria.
Yeah.
And it seems like she has channeled her inner Victoria.
She has.
She walks around the Capitol grounds and shakes hands and says hi.
Yeah, yeah.
Barbara never did that.
No.
Yeah, so it's like, oh, I think my work here is done.
Uh-huh. All good for her.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens, but it's hard to see how she'd be needed. So your dad's in office. Did he talk to you as all of a sudden the economy was falling apart and that kind of stuff?
Well,
you're running your own business.
Yeah.
I mean, you got your own family. You're doing all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and he's calling special sessions and
yeah.
and imposing taxes, you know.
Yeah,
really.
No, the income tax surcharge there,
oh,
yeah.
That was gutsy, man. Fortunately, yeah. he put a sunset clause
yeah.
on it.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was tough times for Oregon.
Yeah.
And tough times for Republicans, too.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, in political science, we're pretty convinced that if the economy's gone south, there's no way an incumbent will be reelected.
Yeah.
And guess what? He's reelected by a record amount.
Mm-hmm.
So there you are. But a lot of it is because he was able to convince people that what he'd done had been working, and he was the steady hand.
And it was no easy task, and someone has to take the lead. So
yeah, yeah.
He'll take the lead.
One thing I haven't been able to find, because your dad, his rule was govern as if you're not running for re-election.
Yeah.
So what if he decided not to run for re-election? Who would the Republican nominate?
Boy, I don't know.
The people in the legislature, but none of them really would have the stature.
Right.
Hard day at the office or anything like that?
Not so much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you go see him much when he was down in Salem?
Yeah, we visited the house on Winter Street.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's, of course, now they've got Mahoneyal Hall, but
yeah.
That house was converted to an office and then back to a house. It really wasn't quite up to snuff.
Wasn't quite up to snuff for really anything.
Yeah. Really.
One of the parties, because your mother, especially for the first term, she might have in, like, Jerry Thompson's daughter or something to help, but she was the total hostess.
Yeah.
She did the cooking, she did everything. And
yeah.
Your dad would be holding court back in the
yeah,
house.
We've got her recipes for, like, 40 people.
Oh, great. But at one point, somebody came in and said, oh, is this a Tia Brothers? And he said, oh, no, the state could never afford that.
Yeah. Yeah, we were, when the Kitts Harbor thing blew up, we were asking my mom, well, what kind of a staff and office did you have? She says, I had a closet.
Yeah, yeah, and Jerry had to work really hard to get her a closet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And another thing, talking to Barbara Roberts, and this is, I barely, they didn't call them first ladies.
Well.
There was, in official stuff, so like when you go to the National Governor's Conference.
Yeah.
That's
now changed her name.
She has.
Yes, that's Kitts Harbor. that week that Kitzhaber was going down, she thought,
oh, she did.
That week, by the time I heard it, it's now LaCroix, Sharon LaCroix.
That's great. So ride that as long as you can and get off that surfboard.
Mm-hmm.
That is very funny. But yeah, she's the one who said, you know, the wife of the governor is the first lady. He called me the first lady.
Mm-hmm.
All those weird things. Anything while your dad's governor jump out at you as you know, kind of the personal way that he dealt with things?
No, he was, you know, honestly concerned about family and business,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
you know, would be poking around asking questions.
Yeah.
How's it going? You know.
Yeah. During that, especially the recession time, and then the recession and the Rajneeshis come on. So your dad makes that a bookend, you know.
Yeah.
Recession, the Rajneeshis, one or the other, but both of them together, that was really hard.
Yeah.
But at one point, Jerry came in and said, I just can't sleep at night. How do you sleep at night? I just stick with my principles. I follow my principles.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah.
But as growing up, did you see those principles? Did you see him have that calm demeanor?
Well, yeah. You know, he's a true Boy Scout.
Yeah. Yeah.
He kept the coin in his pocket about doing a good turn every day.
Yeah.
So he stuck with the principles.
Yeah. I've just, in the past week and a half, dug through, and so I've got his principles. There's like 10 of them.
Yeah.
Just crystal clear.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they come into conflict. So one of them is do good for the state of Oregon.
Right.
And another one is government is okay, but there has to be a really good reason for government to get into people's lives.
Yep.
It's not that it shouldn't be there,
mm-hmm.
but there has to be a really good reason. So the bottle bill, those
yeah.
collide.
Yeah.
So he eventually votes for the bottle bill. Dad is so ticked off. But it turns out in one of the junkets that the lobbyists would take them on, they'd actually had a fishing contest up in British Columbia. And Dad had beat Bill in a
hat. Who shot before him got a 10,
mm-hmm.
and my dad got a 10X, which is right in the middle
right
of the strike,
smack
and that's how I beat him.
Wow.
I'm on the scope of 10X, you know.
Yeah. Wow. That's fascinating. But the other thing is fishing.
Yeah.
You know, you brought out the fishing rod at the
yep.
service.
Yeah, gone fishing.
1978, in the campaign, Paul Phillips was ordered to keep a fishing pole in the trunk to pull over as your dad would get stressed.
Yeah.
Pull over and, you know, take 15 minutes and have him just fish.
Whether or not you catch anything makes no difference.
So, talk about fishing growing up.
Well, we just put a photo in the family cabin at Rhododendron of him fishing as a teenager on the zigzag.
Yeah.
And I remember telling me he caught some big fish. It must have been like a steelhead or something like that. Showed it to, and was talking about it to Merle Campbell, Jim Campbell's dad, and showed him the fish. Mm-hmm. And Merle said, "Oh, I'll never doubt you again."
It's not a fish story. It's a fish story.
Yeah.
Did you and your dad go fishing a lot when you were growing up?
Yeah, up at Opal Creek in particular.
Uh-huh.
First of all, there's nobody up there.
Yeah.
And then there's the, you know, rainbow trout and Eastern Brook.
Uh-huh.
And have you been up to Opal Creek?
No.
You got to do it. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And the geology is great and nice smooth rocks. You know, you can see the fish. You got to sneak up on them because the water is so clear.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, going up in Southern Oregon, that's the Smith River.
Yeah.
It's just, you can, in fact, because I was a swimmer, we would go swimming down there, and you're down there with the steelhead.
Yeah.
You know, under the rocks. It's like, this is cool.
Yeah.
I wish I could hold my breath forever.
And you heard the story that fly rod my dad made for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I caught my first fish on it.
Yeah.
In the Little North Fork, which is just down below where Battle Axe and Opal Creek come together.
Uh-huh. Did he make his own, did he tie his own flies? Did he do any of that kind of stuff?
He didn't tie flies.
Did he make other rods?
He did make other rods.
Yeah. My closest friend in college, his family actually was big in the fly tying in Long Island.
Oh, really?
Like beginning in the 1890s or something.
Huh.
So, who would know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. So that's something he just, it's like golf. It kind of stays with him forever.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And of course, we went fishing on the chutes a lot.
Yeah.
And it was pretty funny. I had this rug of my dad's that I was selling.
Uh-huh.
It's an expensive rug, like $65,000.
Yeah.
And the guy who was buying it in California said, "Well, I'll buy the rug, but you got to take me fishing on the Deschutes." I can do that.
I can live with that.
Yeah.
It's a condition I can, I can do. Got out of there, and they were barely able to shake his hand. Dad didn't let any conversation take place whatsoever.
Just start talking about guns.
Just start talking about guns.
Yeah.
But therapy for him, and the fishing was therapy.
Sure,
for
sure.
So, in fact, at the same time when I was meeting with him, when he asked me to write the book, he was showing us his governor's fisherman's license, because his license was always 001.
Yeah.
And he showed us his 1979 license because it was regular, whatever it was, 3,422.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you know you're not governor anymore. Right there.
Yeah, I was counting on, when he had to renew his driver's license, I was counting on the state not giving him the license.
Yeah.
But they said, oh, governor, we'll give you another 10 years. I'm going, you guys. And then he would show me the license and go, nah, 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 nah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Oh, my dad is, 80, gonna be 81. And he just loves to drive, but he hasn't been able to see at night for 10 years.
Yeah.
And he still drives at night.
Mm-hmm.
And talks on the phone.
Yeah.
Don't do this.
Right.
He wonders why I don't call very often. The reason I don't call very often is because you're going to pick up the phone if you're in the car.
Right.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Don't do that. Just saying, we're marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we live right over there, and so last week was fun because the Blue Angels were practicing right over our house.
Yeah, they were up over here too because you know they had to turn around and go back to Hillsboro.
Yeah, when you're going, I'm sure they're not going 700 miles an hour, but they're going fast.
Yeah,
it's a long way.
This is my own air show here.
Yeah,
don't have to go anywhere.
Yeah, it's great fun. Golf.
Mm-hmm.
Do you golf?
I don't.
Okay. No.
I've got
to see what goes, you know, through the family.
I've got his clubs, though.
Oh, okay.
So, eventually, I'll take up some golf when I got time.
Yeah, yeah.
We, our neighbor up over there has a pin.
Uh-huh.
And he drives from the top of his property towards the pin.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of times, the golf balls will go over and land on my property.
Right.
So, we gather them up, and then once a year, we chip balls.
Get them back over the fence.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, funny stories about golf. When he was governor, he actually was really conscious of the fact when he was going to Japan and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
While there's a golf thing that needs to happen, he can't be seen as the governor who goes to Japan to golf.
Right.
And then when he becomes a consultant afterwards, golf the storm.
Yeah. I've got some golf balls that have the state seal on one side
and
Victor Atiyah's signature on the other side.
That's great. So let's talk international.
Yeah.
So there's some international trips. There's one trip to Costa Rica I haven't gotten into.
I don't know
that. For his term.
That would have been a fun one to go on.
Which is fascinating because, I don't know if you're aware, Oregon and Costa Rica are, like, sister states.
Yeah.
So there's a high school, students going back and forth all the time,
mm-hmm.
that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's tied into that. But it's
could be. Could
fascinating
be.
Costa Rica.
Yeah.
Costa Rica. But especially after that, after his re-election, we're going to travel.
Yeah.
We're going to get business here. We're going to go do that. So what was it like to be on those trips?
Well, it was a lot of fun. The first one I went on was to the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And I caught up to them in Egypt. I had work to do, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was pretty funny. Alan Oda, who was a reporter for the Oregonian,
mm-hmm.
very polite Japanese guy, mm-hmm. he was on the flight with me. So we land in Cairo. And negotiating for a taxi,
mm-hmm.
And I said, I'll need a ride with me. So I started. price went like from $80 to like $9 or something like that. And he was really embarrassed because I put the bags in the trunk and take them out. You know, haggle with the Egyptian thing.
Yeah.
And that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
And then, of course, going to Syria was like a really big deal for my dad. And I was in the lead car to get the media up there. Uh-huh. I knew the route. So, you know, went up by the castle and over the hill and the village. And it was pretty cool.
Yeah. That trip has been described as blasting along those roads.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And meanwhile, in the car, your dad's like, he looks down and starts talking about the pistol and then give it to him.
Yeah, that's right. Another Colt.
Yeah, which had long commentaries.
Yeah, T-U-N.
Oh, yeah. Well, I gotta get this thing back! So, had you been to the village before?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, you were there in 70.
Yeah, 70 and then 72.
Uh-huh.
And 76.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Now, is the village just filled with Atiyahs?
No, but there's a lot of other families there. But the Atiyah family is pretty prominent.
Okay.
Because they have one of the larger houses.
Uh-huh.
And they also have olive orchards.
Okay. Doing research, it's amazing. People have written about that village.
Yeah.
Because still, 70% of the Middle Easterners who come to the United States are Syrian or Lebanese.
Mm-hmm.
And Ammar turns out to be a great case study, partly because, once again, I'll never be able to go there. Well, not for the next X years.
Yeah.
But they've got in the library, they have all the lists of overseas people.
Hmm.
So you can just go through and see.
Yeah.
So the first one to leave town was an Atiyah, but not your Atiyah. And then the prominent one who left town was an Atiyah, but not your Atiyah. And then there was actually an Aziz Atiyah and his brother George. George went back, but then George is actually the George that's still in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. So there's a huge chunk of people from the village in Allentown and environs.
Well, you know, one thing that they had going for them was that I think they went to the American University of Beirut.
Yeah.
And they also had a bunch of horses that they sold.
Yeah.
So they had cash, and they were smart, you know, when they came to the U.S.
Right.
A lot of immigrants didn't have that type of advantage. So.
Yeah, yeah. I'd love to be able to talk to Aziz and see how he chose the linen business going into the rug business.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, pretty quickly found out in Pennsylvania, there's just too many of them here.
Yeah.
So, Portland.
Yeah. What a great place to land.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, trying to figure that out, it turns out between 1880 and 1900, the population in Portland quintupled.
Yeah.
Because the railroad came in.
Mm-hmm.
And that all of a sudden, you know, if Aziz comes and looks at it and says, aha.
Yeah, this place is growing.
You can see growth will happen. There is a connection. I can get my rugs here.
Yeah.
It becomes a good option.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas 15 years earlier would not have been a good option at all. Do you know the other parts of the world that people from Ammar went to and Atiyahs went to? There's a chunk of them in Argentina.
Oh, really?
And the Caribbean.
Well, I know because I own the domain Atiyah.com.
Uh-huh.
So that's usually the first thing you look up in the internet. So I get, you know, connections from all over the world
on
Atiyah.
Yeah. Yeah, and then when your dad was governor, there was an Atiyah who was drafted in the NFL. And
that's right.
Yeah. I think it was a George, too.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. It's wild stuff. So going to the Middle East, so it's a combination of business and home.
Yeah.
Were you firmly in the business at that point?
I was firmly in the Tia Brothers, the retail side of things.
So were you doing business connections while you were there?
I was looking, but there really wasn't so much to do in Egypt or Syria.
Yeah, yeah.
But then when we went to China, that's when things...
So tell me about that. So is this the 84 trip?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're...
Did you go to Japan and China both?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, but China is really great. Couldn't do this today, but we were at the Great Hall of the People.
Mm-hmm.
And Premier Zhao Ziyang was there with his group, and we were there with our group, and they start talking about Taiwan.
Uh-huh.
And how you shouldn't be, you know, thinking Taiwan is China, and going back and forth. And finally, my dad pulls out a exactly.
Okay.
And, great. My wife speaks Chinese.
Yeah, I knew that.
So, that helped a lot.
Yeah. Huh. Wow. So you saw direct benefits.
Absolutely, right away.
Yeah.
And we imported some things, like lacquerware and the camphor wood chests and stuff while we were trying to get things going.
Yeah.
Then brokered some TVs and chairs and things for other people while we were getting things going. Oh. We had one of the first fax machines in Portland.
Oh, yeah?
Because China went from telex to fax overnight.
Yeah.
And it would cost like $6 to send a little bit of telex. And then the faxes were cheap. We were charging attorneys like $5 a page to borrow our fax.
Wow.
We paid for that fax in a hurry.
Great.
And now people rarely fax anymore.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing to see how many people have fax numbers on those. Like, geez, if we have to fax in our office, it's a big deal. You got to find the machine.
Yeah.
I don't know what the number is.
Yeah, ours is, we still have our fax number, but it goes through the internet.
Yeah.
And it's not even physical anymore.
Yeah. That's amazing. Did you go to any other trips, international trips?
No, those are the two big.
Thought that they went to the Lewis and Clark with that, but that changed at the end of 1904.
The ads
are AAT and Bro in 1904, and the first one in 1905 is the Tia Brothers.
Right, and that's where the awards are awarded to the Tia Brothers.
Yeah, and there's a banner apparently.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of stuff.
And the retail store has all the cool stuff, the gold medals. I've got all the honorable mentions.
So, 12 first places. We don't talk about the fifth places, but that's great.
Mm-hmm.
That's really great. The parallels are just really fun. In your generation, it's basically you and David are the ones who got into the business as whatever, forms of that.
Yeah, and it worked out great because he came in, he's very smart, he's a CPA.
Yeah.
And so he took over the retail thing, and then I started the importing and wholesaling. So we all had our own turf profit centers.
Thinking about families, I mean, it's remarkable. It looks like it may go to the fourth generation.
Yeah, and Kevin is working there.
It just, that doesn't happen.
No.
It's
Oregon
remarkable.
State honored us for leadership in family business a couple years ago.
Yeah. Any sense of what it was like for your dad and his brothers to work together? Ed is a sweet guy.
Yeah.
So Ed, we got along, we did all this, and then I hear from other people, it's like, tensions between Richard and your dad sometimes, and all this. They came to decisions, but it's family.
It's a family business. You're going to have all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
Like Richard one time wanted me to clean up my desk, and I asked him for a match. That went over real big. Richard was a real clean freak and really, organized. And but I'm not that way, but everyone's got their own technique.
Yeah, exactly. But no stories when, of them, arguing with each other and then saying, okay, well, we'll do it this way or anything.
No, there could be little squabbles. And I'm sure they had their words like any brothers would.
Yeah, yeah. Just fascinating.
Yeah. And, they would share a car.
Yeah. Well, they'd share a car to go to work. They end up living within, they could walk to each other's house in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, I have good friends I grew up with who were twins, who live within the same distance from each other. other things from when your dad's governor jump out at you? Well, attitude, issues that came up? Your mom, how did she deal with all of that?
She was the consummate, do everything for dad type of person.
Uh-huh.
You
know, and just, I know at the end she was really, 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 really happy to get home.
Yeah. Matter of fact, we have dealt with boxes that she didn't unpack from Salem.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, she put it in the attic.
Wow. Wow. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Your mom's personality will come in a little bit for two reasons. First of all, it's pretty clear that she just got ticked off at Bob and wanted to make sure that your dad did not have him back as a driver for the general election.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, the artistic side of your parents would come through in very interesting ways.
Yeah, my dad would do all kinds of doodles and things.
Doodles in the 82 campaign, no campaign stuff could go out unless he approved the colors.
Yeah.
Not the shapes or the uh-huh. Elvis. And the words, you know, he would approve that, but the colors. So some things were pulled back. And then in the 78 campaign, your mother and your sister, I think, were actually critiquing the layout and art stuff, which drove the campaign manager nuts.
Yeah, well.
But you do what you do.
Yeah. Well, I think in the family we're very color oriented
mm-hmm.
for two reasons. One, the artistic side, and also rugs.
Yeah.
Color is a big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Matter of fact, my cat is named Sonbai, which is the color for black in Chinese.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the number.
That's great.
And at Restore Oregon, which is the nonprofit that
yeah.
I was working at, I was helping to rebrand it.
Uh-huh.
So the colors I picked are the state of Oregon, blue and
mm-hmm.
gold colors mm-hmm. for the logo.
That's nice.
That's how'd you get this? The state of Oregon.
Yeah. There you are. That's wonderful. I was involved in writing a textbook on Oregon politics. And it published by the University of Nebraska, and they do these politics textbooks kind of for all the states of the country. But the colors they pick for the book are the colors of one of the state universities.
Oh.
So ours ended up being that your dad would love, but I didn't go to Oregon State, but everybody else did. Come talk to him if you want. There's a couple of other college presidents who know this stuff really well. I said, and the book will really appeal to him because it's University of Oregon colors, so it'll work.
Yeah, that's good.
But colors, that's great. Yeah. My dad was a politician at the county commission level, and he did not do colors well. So he's running in 74 when your dad's running for governor the first time. And it's all this mod stuff.
Oh.
So it's this bright green
and
kind
yellows.
Of, you know, fonts that do
yeah.
this. And at that point, the stick'em on bumper stickers was really nasty.
Yeah.
So for 6 months afterward, my brother and I were required to go to supporters with
and
stuff and clean their bumpers off. Oh, Dad, don't do this. So, Mom, very supportive.
Yeah, quite.
Uh-huh. Did she ever get frustrated with it?
Oh, I'm sure she did because she didn't have any staff. She
yeah.
had to do everything
yeah.
by herself, basically.
Yeah. But doing her stuff.
Yep.
Yep. Okay. Another meeting story. Have you ever heard the story about your dad and your mom's first kiss?
No.
Okay. I've only got one source on it, so I can't go with it until I have it. But it's I know that it fits in with what I have verified, which is that your dad basically saw her and said, "Who the heck is that?"
Yeah.
He then the Christmas dance was coming up, and so
at Washington High School.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he knew her last name, so he called Hewitt's in the phone book.
Mm-hmm.
And he finally got her, and she said yes, she'd go. Come to find out later that he'd actually called the right number fairly early on, but her dad was tired of guys calling the dead
That sounds like Jim Hewitt.
But then at the dance, so here's the unverified part. At the dance, it's getting close to the end of the dance, and some people, one source says that it's a New Year's dance, but I think it's this Christmas dance. And so your dad has been told by Jim Campbell, you have to kiss her.
I could just see Jim Campbell egging
it. Little Jim Campbell.
Yeah.
I just would love to see them together.
Yeah.
Well, you have to kiss her. And so your dad's sweating balls, doing all this, and finally it's the time he turns around and she's not there. Because she was the popular girl, so she was going around and she was kissing everybody.
You could ask Donna Campbell about
that. Yeah, she doesn't remember that.
No. Yeah, good.
That's nailed down. And your dad leaves office. He's the ex-governor. So when he's in office, was it harder for family to see him, or?
No, he's accessible. He's just busy.
Yeah, just busy.
Yeah, but then he came in and came into our office in Portland.
Uh-huh.
Because we were set up with a fax machine and telephones, and I gave him my corner office, and I went down the hall.
Uh-huh.
Worked out pretty well.
Uh-huh.
Because we, you know, we owned the building.
Yeah.
I was managing the building.
Yeah.
And fortunately, we had positive cash flow and worked out okay.
Yeah. So that's when he starts his consulting. He's basically out of your your place.
He was on our board, but you know, our board is my wife and myself. And
whatever is legally required.
That's right.
Board.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so he had some nice consulting gigs.
Oops.
And
I think I've just become more than the fabric can handle.
Oh!
I'll sit on the grass.
Okay. Well, that thing's pretty old, so.
Yeah.
You
know, my parents, if they're over 20 years old, all of a sudden, that's about the time.
So, and he got some good gigs, and of course he was on Greenbrier's board.
Yeah, yeah.
And he gave us some of his stock,
mm-hmm.
which is we're using when we make donations to nonprofits.
Oh, great.
Because it's a high value, low basis.
Yeah.
So when you sell it, you just get beat up in a capital gain. So it's easy. But
yeah, absolutely. Do you remember him being on the board of the Equitable?
Oh, yeah. He was really still pissed that that thing went down.
Yeah.
The savings and loan debacle. And
yeah.
Bill Love was the chair. He's president back then. So.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because that shouldn't have been liquidated.
But yeah, when it was like a mania took over.
Yeah.
You know, all sorts of them were just
mm-hmm.
Benjamin Franklin and
you
know, all we had Jackson County down in Southern Oregon and they got caught up in all that.
Yeah, Bob Hazen was the big deal at Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah. Yeah. When I graduated from high school, I graduated in 77 and my grandmother gave me $1,000 basically the equivalent of a CD at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It said, you know, when the depression comes, you live off the interest on this. And I went to Stanford, so it lasted for about a year and a half, and it went for tuition.
Yeah. Boy,
in
cash these days. I mean, I've got CDs, and I'm really? It's like nothing. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I was waiting for the interest rates to come back again.
So. Yeah, my wife just had a CD that just rolled over, and she went to the credit union and said, well, I can get twice as much. You can get 1% here as compared to 0.5% there.
Yeah.
But it's something like that. It's like, you know, she's just trying to figure out what are you going to do with it to get a higher return.
So I've been going to ETFs.
Uh huh.
Happy with that.
Yeah.
I'm getting like 4-6% for conservative stuff.
Yeah.
It's nothing.
Yeah. Just incredible. Yeah. When I teach, I about what the inflation was like and things like that. My grandmother gave me a savings thing. It was great. Got 18% interest.
Well, back.
But let me teach you about inflation.
Back in the 70s, when I was at Atiyah Brothers, I was managing the cash
mm-hmm.
before David came in.
Mm-hmm.
And I would easily cover my salary plus some by just moving money every day.
Wow.
Because we had cash.
Yeah.
And, you know, 18%.
Yeah.
You can make a chunk of change. Just, you know, I'd move, you know, $10,000-$20,000
yeah.
every day back and forth.
Yeah. Different things. Something off the top. Boom, mm-hmm. boom, boom. Amazing.
Yeah.
How long was your dad really active in his post-gubernatorial consulting career? I mean, he still had, you know, people kind of into his late 80s and stuff.
Yeah. He was kind of winding down.
Uh-huh.
And then I said, you know, Dad, it's really time to leave downtown Portland.
Yeah.
He didn't like that at all.
Oh, I know.
But, you know, the office had been robbed and, you know, the area was becoming a little seedy down there and stuff. And
yeah.
He was just getting too old to be going downtown every day.
Yeah. Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised in, actually, once again, one of those scrapbooks. They'd only bought that building in like 72 or 73 or something.
Yeah, I think it was
70. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember, but it was like the 71 one or the 73 one. So
yeah,
I'm not sure which,
so they moved from 10th and Alder to Park and Washington.
Yeah. Which is basically right around the corner, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But so he was winding down, is that... I mean, he was winding down by the mid-90s, 2000-ish?
Yeah.
Right after when he first starts the consulting, I mean, you know, the Japanese love him. He's got those great business cards to go to the Middle East. I speak Arabic and read Arabic, so I was actually able to read the and say yes, it actually says what you hope it does on the other side. And I found out in 1990 he was in D.C. because he's spending a lot of time there on, you know, lobbying people and doing stuff. He just popped in to see President George Bush Sr. to lobby for one of his friends to be appointed to the federal bench.
Oh.
And it was a log jam, and broke the log jam, and the guy's stuff went through. So it's just like, this is cool. Did you get a sense of him as a national figure?
Well, I think people knew him nationally, but he wasn't using that as a... That's a big deal.
Yeah. Well, he, so much of his life, it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
Then you need to make a bigger deal out of this.
Yeah.
I'm discovering, for instance, in 1962, 3, 4, a member of Congress died. First district here. And editorials were talking about your dad would be the best person for the job.
You talk about Wyatt?
No, it's before White. It's Norblad.
Philip Norblad, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So he dies, and it eventually goes to Wyatt gets the seat.
Yeah.
And the editorials don't mention Wyatt. But they're talking about, well, because Norblad had a son, Alvin, and so, you know, he would probably do it. But down at the bottom, it all, they all say, well, you know, who really ought to get it? It's a young up-and-comer, Washington County, which is pretty amazing that he's only been in the legislature for 5 years or so at that point.
I just sent Bill Wyatt a Christmas card that Wendell sent to my dad.
Oh, yeah?
As a congressman.
Oh, yeah? That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Bill just got into the motorcycle crash.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh. Huh.
He'll be okay, but...
Yeah. Sure it wasn't a longshoreman involved?
No. He and my wife were on the first direct flight Portland to Tokyo.
Oh, yeah?
And... this pretty great. She was in business class, and the flight was delayed so much at Portland Airport because of mechanical problems that they gave her a free first class ticket for another flight.
Mm-hmm.
And on the next flight, the same thing happened. So she got three flights for the price of one.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
As your dad got older, he's always been a storyteller. Did you notice that his stories changed?
No. Matter of fact, he liked telling like the same story over and over again.
Yeah.
And my sister, I think I mentioned this, she said, Dad, why are you telling that same story? And he says, well, because I like it.
One thing I noticed, because he did an oral history with the Oregon Historical Society in the early 90s. So when I started interviewing, I was in the process of reading those 1,600, 1,800 pages, which I have every single one of them right here.
Wow.
And so he'd tell me something, and I'd be looking it up, and he'd read word for word what he said in 1992.
Yeah.
And then I'm discovering as I go back and then look at the original stuff, it's word for word what he told the reporter in 1981.
Wow.
Word for word. So there's just something there. He gets, and for as a biographer, it actually makes me suspicious. And so you verify and, yeah, and see what's there. But it's just fascinating.
Yeah.
Fascinating the way that works. One thing that was you guys all knew about, but then didn't become public until 78, was his professional football. And it became public because the campaign staff was there, and Sharon Page actually was looking at stuff on the wall and said, "What's this?"
Yeah.
Came in and said, "Why don't we know about this?"
Yeah.
And so by December, after he's elected, by December, he flies down to the Green Bay Packers in L.A. And it's fascinating because the people involved there, so there's a guy named Wayne Thompson, reporter, there's Denny Miles, and I think it might be Punch Green who goes down with them, I can't remember. They're on a private jet. But they all have different memories of it. It's happened at different times. Wayne's pretty convinced that it was an RV and they went to the Seahawks. All this stuff. So you get all this together, yeah, and you figure out what really happened.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just fascinating. There's truth in there.
Yeah, somewhere.
But the truth and the time and how it happened are different things. So it's just a fascinating process. So when your dad does the same word for word, I always go back and I gotta nail this down.
Really?
To make sure that's what happened. So anything else jump out?
No, it's just fascinating having your dad be governor.
Yeah.
And,
now, you had a professional life at that point, so
did it,
people say, Atia, you know, did they...
Well, it's really funny, you know, usually they would say, are you related to Victor Atia?
Mm-hmm.
But in the last few years... It's, are you related to Megan Atia?
Uh-huh.
That's my daughter.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Things changed a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if she has the same office, but somebody was in her office who was in the legislature when your dad was governor. And basically from there, you can look right down to the house.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Which is kind of cool. He was saying, I went to receptions there.
Yeah, and of course, we had to behave when he was there.
Yeah. Yeah, in a minor way, that's because my dad was the county commissioner. We had that as well.
Yeah.
It's like, so that's right. And it was, for me, going into high school and stuff, when I was becoming really politically aware and I wanted to write letters to the editor and stuff, and you couldn't.
No.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
My brother, however, younger and always the wild one, would answer the phone and say just horrible things. But yeah, my brother also grew pot in the backyard, so when the county sheriff would come over for a party, it's like, make sure they don't go in the tomato plants.
Well, now it's legal.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Now it's legal. That's legal.
Yeah, who would have thought that?
Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
I think that's great. You know, less people in prison. And
Yeah. And just see what the federal government does, because that collusion is still...
Yeah, just trying to stay away from the collision, I think.
Yeah. Talking to Earl Blumenauer, he's been in the middle of that for a long time. And I don't know if it'll ever resolve.
Well, the big thing now is all the cash that's floating around.
Yeah, you'd think that the cash would eventually force the banking system to have to be. You'd think the banking system would say, we want to change the rules because we want access to that money.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
Yeah. Becomes thing people thinking with their hearts and not their heads.
Yeah.
Something, you know, looking at your dad, he did. I mean, his heart was really important to him. But he was fundamentally a businessman, saying, do things add up or do they not?
Yeah, absolutely.
What are our goals? Well, that's fine. Figure them out. Yeah. But then, how do we implement this?
Yeah, it's pure business.
Yeah. Yeah. From that very first term. It's not in the other stuff that had already come over. There's three pages of yellow ruled paper, and he's taken them home and with the budget, and he's gone through the budget, and he looks at it and says, this doesn't do what we think it does.
Yeah.
It's his very first term,
mm-hmm.
very first committee, and he's sitting there saying, you know, we can do this, but this isn't it. So it's just remarkable.
Yeah, and some legislators get it, and others don't. They're
yeah.
just there to make big stuff for themselves and
yeah.
not for the state.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When your dad is involved in repealing the unitary tax.
Yeah,
that's a big deal. So when you guys go to Japan, you're welcome to Japan like conquering heroes
yeah.
because of that.
And Jim Gaffney had a lot to do with that.
yeah. Yeah, yeah, but it's there's a memo that Jerry put together of who would vote for in the special session, and then your dad goes through and he adds like 17 names. He just pencils them in. He's on top of this thing.
Yeah, dialed in.
But there's another memo that she wrote where she's talking about the details. Barbara Roberts is in favor of it and thinks it's a great idea and understands. She was on the revenue committees and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Liz Van Leeuwen, another legislator, doesn't understand this at all. She doesn't know if she's for it or against it. She just can't conceive of what it is. But it's just funny to see that written very clearly out. This legislator doesn't know what the hell's going on. We may be able to count on their vote or not. And it passed overwhelmingly. But just what you have to do to get legislation passed. It's a big lesson for your dad.
Yeah.
In the legislature, how do you get here to getting 31 votes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had that discussion with my executive director at Restore Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
We were sponsoring Senate Bill 565, which was the Main Street Act.
Mm-hmm.
And she was saying, well, we need to do this. And no, this is how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Yeah. Trust me on this.
Yeah. That's pretty amazing. The guy that I interviewed on the coast, elected 64, and so he goes in there, and he thought that the way that you legislated is you just clearly explain things to people, and they would agree with you. And then people wouldn't agree with him, and he started mentally just saying, well, I don't know if I can ever trust that person. It took him about halfway through the session to figure out there are a lot of motivations for why people vote.
That's right.
And if you do this, you're going to be a party of one pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But it's the reality of a legislature.
Yeah. People have long memories and they have different relationships.
Yep. Yep. Good. Anything else?
No, but let me take you in the office so I'll dig out that letter that my mom wrote.
Yeah, that'd be great.